Welcome back to the program. Had a malfunction. Apologize for that. Jim Heaney joins us.
Yeah.
He joins us from investigativepost.org. Sir, thank you for taking time out of your day.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Appreciate you. Tell me, when you started at Investigative Post, what was the first story that you think really put you on the map as far as this has to be taken seriously? It's a one newspaper town. WBN's out there trying to get, you know, the radio listeners online, or, you know, all the, you enter the game. What was that first story that you said, okay, this is good, this is working?
It was actually our very first story, and it was an analysis of the then newly announced Buffalo Billion program, in which I spoke to a lot of experts who came to the conclusion of the way to use the Buffalo Billion turned out to be the exact opposite way Andrew Cuomo used it. You know, they said avoid the magic bullet projects, be very selective in what you fund. And, of course, the governor went whole hog on Tesla. And, you know, years later of corruption and failed job creation, here we are.
So what is the what is the reception when you run a story like that and you're actually putting the time and the effort, the sources, the facts that you're putting in there, you write this story and people are respecting you, and at the same time they're also, you're on the radar, and so now they're not maybe so happy to get a phone call from Jim Heaney or someone that works with Jim Heaney. When you show up on the map and people realize there's another source out there that you really have to be careful with, because Investigative Post is going to zap you if you mislead with the story that you have about the Buffalo schools. You know, you're not joking around with these FOIA requests. You put out the Freedom of Information Act. You rode this guy. You detailed it. You don't read that in any other periodical.
Well, me and my reporters, and I've got three full-time reporters, you know, our mission is to produce hard-hitting stories of importance. We don't cover, you know, typically don't cover, you know, daily events. We don't cover press conferences or press releases. We don't do sports. We're really trying to focus on issues that matter. And I think we've, you know, we're not everybody's cup of tea. I mean, there are any number of politicians in town who either are reluctant to deal with us or just outright refuse to deal with us. And we're not necessarily unique in that, but we mean business, and people know that. I think the larger reception is, I think, an appreciation that there is a news organization in town that's dedicated, you know, exclusively to doing watchdog journalism, and there's certainly a growing need for that, and we don't fill that need completely, but we do a pretty good job getting it at least partially filled.
Well, you've done a good job covering the Buffalo Police Department. There was a story that was talking about how there was an effort to maybe hide or keep out of the light some of the officers that had disciplinary action on their records. And then there's the story on Hurdle. And again, when you get a story like Hurdle, the deep dive that you did on that was pretty much talking about the owner of this bar and his relation to the Democrat Party. Is that really the crux of what that story needed? If you were going to layer this story, one of the takeaways here is that this is a politically connected person who's at the center of something that's very controversial.
Yeah, we tend not to, you know, we don't chase the same stories. If the television stations and the Buffalo News and the radio stations are all chasing a story or a particular angle of a story, that's not what we do. We try to find a niche that has not been covered, or just a topic that isn't being covered at all, and we do a deep dive on that. For example, you know, the coverage yesterday and today on the MT Pocket situation in North Buffalo. I mean, everybody reported on Poloncarz's press conference and the fact that the bar, under pressure, agreed read the close. And we noted that in our reporting, but we really wanted to know who owns this place and what are their connections. And what we found out, which really has not been reported elsewhere, you know, the bar came out with a statement at some point late yesterday afternoon saying, you know, some of our patrons got out of hand. We apologize. You know, shouldn't have happened. In fact, it was the owner of the bar who was on the sidewalk yelling at the protesters. And it was the owner's brother who dropped his pants and mooned the crowd. You know, what you don't find out from the other news outlets that you found out if you read us was that the owner and his brother were in the middle of this ugliness. And the brother wound up getting suspended from the sewer authority for it. You know, again, we, you know, and you know, we got into what nobody else got into is this bar owner's deep history on political contributions. The fact his wife is a state Supreme Court judge. You know, we tend to do the deep dives that a lot of other news organizations don't do.
Well, it's certainly from the text board, the folks that have gone to investigativepost.org and read this, they say that this is, I'm hearing from people on the text board saying that you got the story right. One of the things, because they were there, they know people there. One of the things, though, that I want to just, from your reporting, the guy in Franklinville that is using the N-word, is that the only time that word is used? Is he the only person using that word, or did you find that other people were using the N-word?
We did not cover the original story, so I'm not in a position to.
But I mean, there's comment that, there were comments in the story. You mentioned that there were patrons that were inside of the bar that were antagonizing or at least responding to.
Oh yeah. What happened the other night? Yeah, there were multiple people who were using the offensive language.
There's also I don't even know if it's been substantiated, but one of the patrons said that one of the Black Lives Matter protesters struck either the owner or a patron of that bar. Did you find that to have happened?
That's news to me. I haven't seen that reported anywhere.
So how do we, when we get to the political contributions and the fact that, and again, I'm not saying that this isn't newsworthy, but I wouldn't have known that from any other source had you not, you know, written that piece, or Jeff Kelly written the piece, I should say. But my takeaway,
so, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I was looking at the other Jeff Kelly piece. The takeaway from that though, is that, you know, we all have our political affiliations, the way we see the world. When you look at this situation, there is sympathy with a bar owner in Buffalo trying to make it in COVID who feels that protests around his business are affecting his business. You can feel empathy towards that point of view. But the way this story had, you know, this story all became about a guy in Franklinville in the street yelling something with a knife in his hand. And we kind of took a step out of, I think, the community and looked at this from 35,000 feet, which is there are ways that you could look at both sides. But when the N-word comes into play, it really just disqualifies everything. It's so toxic, it's so hurtful, and it's so politically incorrect that no matter what side you're on, no matter what argument you have, you disqualify the argument when you go to that level.
Well, you know, let's go back to the original incident and looking at we didn't report on it, but in looking at the video on social media, it doesn't appear that the protest happened in front of the bar. It looked like the incident really started to play out more or less at the corner, the intersection of Parkside and Hurdle, which is a block and a half, maybe two blocks away from the bar. So that there was not. This guy's bar, I don't believe, was being targeted, you know, over the weekend. Allie Ingersoll, one of my reporters, who was there Tuesday night reporting on it, said that the reason why the protesters kind of rallied in front of the bar was because the police who were leading the way in their squad cars stopped there. And when the police car stopped there, well, that's where the protesters stopped. I don't know for a fact one way or the other whether or not the bar was being particularly targeted by protesters when all the hostilities began.
What do you say to
that? And you know, even David, even if they were the response from the owner and his brother and his patrons, you're right. It does disqualify any further discussion. You don't act like that. That's just completely inappropriate. It would be inappropriate in any day and age, but particularly this day and age. And again, you've got these statements from the bar now saying, "Oh, it was our patrons." Well, some of it was the patrons, but some of it was the owner. And the owner's brother, again, the owner's brother has been suspended from his job amid allegations that he dropped his pants and mooned the crowd.
There are very few altercations.
Way off the charts.
There are very few things. If there was a list of 10 topics that Jim Heaney and I could be into a heated battle over, none of them would end with either one of us dropping our pants. I mean, that mooning someone, that is truly off the radar of sanity. I will give you that. But here's my question. Why does it matter? And I'm a conservative Republican, and I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the Democrat donations. Jeremy Zellner shouldn't have to give money back because a member of his party did something stupid. And I don't really see what difference it makes that he gave money to Democrats or was the best Democrat or the worst Democrat. And that he married a justice, that she has a job. Is that somehow, I guess what I'm saying, in the era where everyone is retaliatory about a story that comes out, they're doxing people, finding out where you live, finding out where your business is. Do you feel a responsibility of putting this information out puts more people, maybe that they could be in the target of a protest? Now we're going to go to the judge's office and protest her because of who she married. Is there a responsibility in putting that information out?
Well, there's a responsibility, but I think it is very relevant information. I mean, who owns this bar and you know, what are his, you know, it turned out when we started, we had no idea who owned the bar. We just went fishing to see what information was out there. And the fact that the owner of the bar is the state Supreme Court judge, it's interesting. The fact that he's a major donor to Democratic candidates, that's interesting. The fact that major Democratic candidates, including the county executive and different state and local officials, frequently use the bar is a place to do fundraising. That's all relevant. I don't know if that indicts anybody, but I think it's relevant, interesting information, and that's why we put it out there.
But I'm just saying that it's going to inevitably be used by Republicans to say, you guys have racists in your party, you took a racist money, it's the David Duke thing, it's the...
I don't know if that's necessarily a reaction, and I don't think any news organization should not report something for fear of how political parties might use the information. Political parties are going to use.
You're going to do your job, and it doesn't matter.
Well, no, we're going to do our job to inform the public, and what the public, how the public chooses to use that information, is up to the public.
I'm just saying, as a public service announcement, when Jim Heaney is on your voicemail, trouble's coming. It's going to be a bad day for someone.
Well, we also do a lot of analytical pieces that aren't necessarily investigative, but are hopefully insightful.
I want to talk about one of those other pieces outside of the hurdle situation. The story on the Buffalo Public Schools. I was fascinated by this. We're talking about distance learning, and the piece is the statistics, the data that show that distance learning is working, isn't working. Can we see the raw data? And when you asked for the raw data from the public schools, you got a runaround. They did not want to, you know, because truancy has been an issue in city schools all across the country. Kids don't show up to schools, and predominantly when those kids don't show up, they don't do well. What happens to an American citizen at 18 without a high school diploma? You're setting that person up for failure. And so getting these kids in school are important. Now, the argument has been distance learning. More kids are showing up. They're doing well. It's working. Teachers love it. Parents love it. Investigative Post does interviews with parents, teachers. Everyone's saying it's not working. And everyone's saying that the teachers are at least saying that attendance is actually lower in distance learning than it was in person.
Yeah. I mean, you know, back fairly early in the pandemic, I had a discussion with my staff. It was on the phone, of course, because we had all scattered to our own remote working. And I said, you know, I wonder how distance learning is working, particularly in Buffalo schools, because of the challenges that students and their families have when it comes to access, internet access. So, you know, Allie Ingersoll started to work on the story, did kind of a group Zoom interview with a bunch of folks from the school district, and then asked for data and at that point, because I've worked with the FOI law for like my entire career, you know, I filed a Freedom of Information request. I asked for very basic information. You know, essentially, I'd like the attendance rate of students and teachers. I'd like to know, to the extent they're working online, what does that look like? Is that is a typical student or teacher online participating in learning 30 minutes a day or 6 hours a day? Just real basic, you know, ABC kind of stuff. And the district, the school district's attorney dragged his feet in honoring, in responding to my information request, to the point where we eventually had to engage our attorneys to inform them, either give us the information or we're taking you to court. And then and only then, about after we submitted the request, we got a reply that basically said, oh, we don't have that information. Which was, you know, I don't know which is worse, David. Let me ask you a question. Which is worse, to suppress information of this nature or to actually not know what the attendance rate is for students and teachers?
It would be.
Which is worse?
No, it would be a valuable data point to have just for your own internal purposes. Even if you didn't want to share them, I would much rather, if you're going to lie about something, I would lie about not wanting to share it rather than saying I don't even collect that data.
Yeah, and you know, I'm very skeptical that they don't collect that data. I think in all likelihood they were probably embarrassed by what the numbers were and didn't want to let that out. And you know, the school district did political organizations do. They often try to wait reporters out. Put them off. Maybe they'll go away. Maybe we'll make it so difficult to report that story that the story won't get reported. But that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen with me. I will wait you out, I will get the story.
Can I grab you for another segment? I want to talk about OTB. You got time for that?
Great.
Yeah. All right. So Jim Heaney, Investigative Post. Just want to ask questions about what's going on. OTB, there were some stories in July written about that. We've talked about the Buffalo schools. We'll get more into that story and also what happened at the empty pockets bar, and investigativepost.org has a piece up, really in depth, a lot of information out there. Some people are saying this is the best piece written about it. Other people are saying, you know, why do I need to know that he gave to the Democratic Party? What does that actually say about Democrats? Is it necessary? You know, I'm actually defending Jeremy Zellner. I mean, what the hell's going on? We have to dump that last 80 seconds there.